All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com, local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. October the 15th, 2024. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. Hope it's great wherever you are at. Definitely cooled down this morning. A chill is in the air finally. I've been looking forward to a little cool down. It's been hot. The funny thing is, I always think that, oh, this is unusual. This is out of sorts, this heat. Not really. It always seems to be sort of hot and muggy until Halloween. Halloween seems to be the change where everything kind of switches over, you know, roughly the day before, or day after, or even on the day. But I can definitely think back through the years of taking the kids out trick-or-treating and Halloween being the day. It's either, I mean, we've gone out and it's been really hot and then the next day it was cold, or we've gone out when it's really cold, but that seems to be the switch. So we probably got about 15 more days of this, you know, whatever weather, but it is definitely chilly out this morning. Got up, went for a run. Hands were freezing, but it felt good. I need to try and fire up the old exercise muscles again a little bit. Not bad. I don't feel bad. I don't really feel too heavy. I feel pretty good. Definitely been watching what I eat, watching how much I eat, watching when I eat. And I also gave up coffee just because it was so acidic, and I felt like it was kind of, isn't that the problem? We get old and we start feeling, right? I feel like it was, but my stomach was sort of burning a little bit. I think I was drinking too much coffee, so I'm giving it a break. I've just been drinking green tea with a little bit of honey, and that's been fine for today. Yeah, great run. Was supposed to paddle the other day and got booted because they sort of had something scheduled, and they were gonna, this group is gonna try, I think, try to race in Miami, and they needed to, you know, gel a little bit, and so they said there was confusion. There wasn't even an opening, but they appreciate me signing up. And I was like, yeah, no problem. So I have to, I'm going to try to add a few more things into my regiment of activities so that I can sort of just stay normal, right? I don't want to be the best or anything. I just want to be normal. And, I think I've shared, my dad's back in rehab. I went and visited him yesterday. He's not doing very well. And, you know, granted, he is 87, but, and I'm sure every person wants to take care of themselves so that when they get to that age, they're not that bad, but it just seems inevitable. And, you know, it's a great reminder. Definitely take care of myself now so that hopefully when I do get older, it won't be too, too bad. And, but yeah, I just thought I would sit down. I just finished running, had cleared the mind. I did go to a meeting last night, and I'm sponsoring a new guy, and he actually called me and asked me if I would pick him up. And so I said, sure. I went and picked him up, and we went to a meeting last night. It was really good. The only thing was is that before I went on vacation, this meeting, we were reading Working With Others, and I think I shared, I can't stand reading Working With Others. I get it. I think it's important. I do think if you've never worked with others, I think it's probably important to read, but the separation of time, right, from 1939 or whatever it was to now, so much has changed, and you know, I think probably the principles are all correct, but, you know, it's like I don't know. It's just interesting. And so when I was away, I was like, okay, well, at least I'll miss that second half of that. But I think while I was gone, they must have done a step. And then, of course, when I come back yesterday, we finished the second chapter, and I was like, oh my God.
I can't stand.
Can't Stand Losing You, The Police. Classic, great song. But yeah, so got back, went to the meeting last night, and of course it was the second half. I don't dislike the chapter. I do think it's important. I know when I came to the program early on, I just thought everybody should be sober. I still think that. Nothing's changed. As a person that's been doing this program for a long time, I think everybody should be in Alcoholics Anonymous, regardless if you drink or not, right? Because I do think it's a great way to learn who we are and how we tick, right? And when we get out of our ticker, we can adjust ourselves and hopefully feel better. The problem is that I had to be facing life or death before I became willing. And the willingness is the challenge, and especially in that when you read that chapter, because, you know, I don't know when that... I guess the book came out in 39, so it had to be around then. And, you know, life was just so much different back then. And the other thing, and I shared this last night, I go, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, and it even says it, we don't have to go down that far, right? It talks about in the chapter, you might have to bring people into your house, right? They may break furniture, falling over, drunk, right? Can you imagine a drunk person... A person you probably don't even know, right? A random drunk in your house and then falling down and breaking your coffee table like a Chris Farley skit on Saturday Night Live, right? That, you know, who would do that today? Nobody, right? Doesn't mean we shouldn't do it today, but the problem was back then there wasn't Alcoholics Anonymous. So you either got, it was jails, institutions, or death, oh my, right? And so these alcoholics were bad. And, you know, if you were in 1945 and 1950 and you're trying to help an alcoholic, yeah, these words would be helpful. And like I said, I do think they're helpful, but I don't think we deal with the same. And like I said, you know, the fact that we have Alcoholics Anonymous raised the bar, and these people that I know don't have to lose everything. They don't have to be a fall down drunk all the time. They don't have to have wet brain. They don't have to be in asylums. They don't have to live on the streets, right? We've got a lot of things in place to help people like that. We know how to fix it if the willingness is there. And but it's changed. It has definitely changed. And in that chapter, when you read it, it talks about basically you have to have willingness, and you have to have the ability or the desire to find God. If you do not have the willingness to find God, then you might as well not get sober. I mean, it doesn't say that, but it says it in so many words. You have to find, this is a spiritual imbalance. Malady. Spiritual malady. And, you know, today we don't push that agenda that much. Like, hey, buddy, you better find God, man. And I've talked about it hundreds of times. This is the core thing about getting sober, is God. No God, no good. No good, no God. And I've talked to people. I'll do all that, but I'm not going to do the God part. And I'm like, well, you know, okay. But what do I think inside? I hope you'll change your mind, right? And then I'm trying to figure out, well, what is, you know, and now, and I shared it in the podcast I did the other day, you know, I'm walking amongst spirits in my life today, good and bad. And you got the big, you know, big boy in the sky. We got God, you know, love, peace, free of fear. And then we got on the other side, self, ego, right? Ego, self is the devil. And then they all have their workers, the angels and the devils and the little devils and the baby devils or whatever they are. But this is my life. I walk amongst the spirits, man. And until a person can recognize that, it's going to be tough. I mean, I don't want to say you can't get sober, but I can tell you, you're probably not going to get sober. And you probably don't even realize what sobriety is. And you probably don't even know what you want. Right? Because I know when I came into the program, all I wanted was to stop drinking and driving. Right? And I stopped that the first day. You know, I remember sharing that, you know, driving home from that first meeting. and being overwhelmed by the feeling of peace, love, and free of fear, because I was doing something that I hadn't been able to do for years, which was drive down the highway and not be drunk. Check. Sign me up. All I care about was that. Right? I don't want to drink and drive, and I want to find better girlfriends. And maybe a better job. And maybe some better money. Right? The list starts growing. Right? But that was, in the beginning, all I wanted was stop drinking and driving and stop and find a decent human being to share my life with. And I checked the first one off on the first day and then immediately went on the hunt, right? And my sponsor's like, do not get into a relationship. No big decisions in the first year. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm different. I was bad. I get it. And I really want to be sober, so I'm different. So I don't need to follow that rule. And I'm just going to do what I want. And that's exactly what I did. And I see people, and at the time I felt like, oh, you're fine. It's okay. School, you're getting an education. It's a girlfriend, really. What's the big deal? I see people like that today, and I scratch my head and I go, man, oh, I feel bad. But those are the things. And then, you know, but those, when you start those first few things happening, I had no focus. I didn't know that I needed to find God. And I was like, by the way, I've tried to find God many times. Thank you. And he will not help me. So I am out. It's hard to find things. When I look back at this whole thing, it was hard at the time. It's easy to see it now. But as a self-centered person, you know, what we seek, what we look for, what we want, and the things we want, and a lot of the things that I wanted back then, a self-seeking person cannot find. It's a catch-22, right? The more you seek, the less you find. It's just, it's poisoned by self. And it's just impossible. And I was so self-centered back in those days. How, obviously, right? Because it was suggested, don't take any new jobs, don't go to any new colleges, and don't get any new girlfriends for the first year. I did all of them. So clearly, I wasn't listening. I was just doing whatever I want because that's the devil of self. Today I look back and I just think, gosh, you know, what an interesting journey. And the only thing that really saved me, the only thing that kept me doing it was just time. And I'm still not saved. I'm still not in the clear, right? there's still opportunities to get into a jam, but you know, I am aware. I walk amongst the spirits today. And, you know, if the sooner, I don't think it's possible to learn that early on. I think you have to put in the time. That's the part. You have to walk this freaking long ass walk and go through all this stuff to start to understand it. But when you do, man, it makes so much sense. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that. But it's definitely clear early on in that chapter. Find God, be willing, and you may have a chance. No God, no willingness. Good luck. Good luck. And but it was good. You know, I'm the other thing that is not interesting, but, you know, seems to be happening a lot, or, you know, it's just a lot of early, young, new recovery. And, you know, a lot of people discussing, you know, situations. I think one person was talking about going to a wedding. I think the person's child was getting married, and they were just so ashamed and embarrassed of themselves and what they've done in their life that they just don't want to go to this wedding, right? Because they just, they're just too embarrassed of themselves and their history. And, you know, it also talks about in that chapter, you know, avoiding the drink, right? I used to say early on, there is nothing that's going to make me pick up a drink, right? I can walk through 100 bars. I can carry cases of vodka. I could pour it over the top of my head. I would keep my lips closed so tight there would not be a chance a drop could get in my mouth. I hate alcohol. Till 5 years later, this voice is like, look how good you've done. You want to try drinking again? I was like, okay, let's go. Right? That freaking easy. That freaking easy. But a lot of the stuff that people were sharing last night about this, like the one incident or the one person was talking about this wedding, you know, all of these answers are solved in the steps, right? And I think, I don't know how many times you can say how important the steps are, but the steps are the key to serenity. Right? Sobriety will not keep us sober. Serenity will keep us sober. Serenity is the next line of defense when the troops come marching in, because you know, and one of them is that, you know, embarrassment, ashamed about my past. You know, the steps teach us this. We go through them. You know, the fourth step, we learn about why we do what we do, what's behind it, what spirit, what devil, what angel is behind these moves and behaviors. And we put it all down, and then we tell on them. You know, my buddy Matt, he said, one of the most important things that I ever heard from my sponsor when I came into this program is share any problems with somebody else, it will cut it in half. And I'm like, what do you mean cut it in half? And he goes, the power that it has on us, the weight, right? The shame, right? I have, you know, I'll have something happen in my day and I'll just not talk about it. And it just is like wearing a backpack of bullshit. Right? And then you talk about it. That's why it's important to do that fifth step. Like RFK Jr. says, there should be somebody on the planet that knows everything about you. excuse me. That means at some point you should tell somebody all of your darkest secrets. And that's what the fifth step is. And I tell you, when that happens, because I tell you, there'll be 50 devils that are telling you don't do it. 50 of them. And they'll be telling you don't do it and don't tell anybody that you don't want to do it. Don't even talk about it. Don't even open your mouth, because as soon as you open your mouth, it cuts it in half and maybe you'll have a chance to do it. But don't, you know, the devils are saying don't do it or don't tell those things. They'll never know. They know. We know. Actually, we don't know. We don't care. As a person that's listened to somebody's fifth step before, I did not care what the person was telling me. It ain't about me. But I tell you, when you're new into recovery and you're trying to go through this process of working these steps, you think it's all about the sponsor. Like, how can I possibly tell these things to this person? What will they think? And you're like, I can't do it. But gone through it many years later, and I've sat down with people and done their fifth step, and I could care less what they said. I'm not shocked. We're just people. But the relief, the weight that it lets off our shoulders is freaking crazy. It's amazing. But that's how we start to move past these things, this history, right? The shame, the guilt, the behavior, the opinions that people have of us, right? We start to just say, listen, you know, they don't go away. Our past does not go away. It's just how we think about it changes. You know, we recognize it. We become accountable for the part that we played in. We make our amends. We clean it up. And then we put it on the shelf. I can see it up there. I know what I did. I'm not putting it away in a box hidden. It's not a secret. We all know what I've done. And I've shared and I've made my amends and I've apologized. If that person doesn't want to accept my apology or wants to continue dragging it around, well, that's up to them. But the reality is most people don't. Most people do not want to drag your history around anymore. Clearly, it depends on stuff that we've done. Hopefully, it isn't so bad that it cannot be forgiven. But, you know, most people want to get past it too. You know, I deal with this with my dad. My dad's back in rehab, and my dad just, you know, he wants to talk about 3 weeks ago when he went back in the hospital. I go, it doesn't matter, Dad. You know, well, you know, but he wants to get aggravated, and he wants to get kind of mad. That's sort of been his groove as I was a kid. You know, he was a guy that kind of got upset, you know, kind of got loud, right? And you know, we sort of sat back and let him do it. You know, he likes to do that. But I'm like, Dad, you're too old to do that today. You know, you got too many good things going on today. You know, we got to move past that stuff. It doesn't matter what the doctor said 3 weeks ago. Here you are, here we are, and this is what we're dealing with. It does not matter today. And that's how recovery is. We cannot be a victim. I'll never forget my buddy Matt. I am not afraid, and I am not a victim. And I was like, what the fuck? I get it today. I heard about all this stuff in the past. You know, I'd worked these steps. I wasn't ready. You know, and it's weird because I don't want to tell. I suggest people, my personal feeling is in the first year, you should just focus on the first three steps, right? Just 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Go to a meeting every day. Talk to a sponsor. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. You know, if you want to read the fourth and fifth steps and start looking at them, that's fine. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Just keep working on that, right? What's my problem? I'm a drunk. How are we going to fix it? We're going to work on those meetings and we're going to try to be as honest as we can, and we're going to work with a sponsor, and we're just going to keep doing it. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And then after your first year, you know, I mean, what's the rush? What's the hurry? It's forever. I mean, unfortunately. Oh, man, I ran and my lungs were cold. But yeah. You know, 1, 2, 3. And then when you get in that first year, you start working on that fourth step. And everybody's telling you, oh, the goddamn fourth step, it's the worst thing. It's the most amazing, freeing, freaking thing you could ever freaking do is a fourth step. And then when you do that fifth step, it makes it even freer. And then you start working on those character defects. But by this time, you've got to have a relationship with God. You have to fake it till you make it. You know, I had many years of trying to understand what a relationship with God is. And today I'm like, you know, and I've said this, it's evolved. And all of a sudden now God found me. God came and found me and said, listen, this is what it is. You see this if you're not out there lying and you're not out there cheating around and you're not out there drinking and drugging and you're not out there doing all these things, you have peace, right? You know, there's been history in my life, and man, when you're living a shady life, man, fear hangs over your head, and it's always scary, and you're always wondering. And you know, I did that during being sober. You know, there was a time in my life where my life wasn't great. I was sober, and I was going to a lot of meetings, but my relationships were bad. I was lost, and I was. Made some bad choices and it was pretty tortured, and felt tortured by that for a long time. Excuse me. And you know, it's only been within the last 5 or 6, 7 years where I started really to feel like I don't have to, you know, worry, and I'm finally feeling free of fear and starting to understand how I created it, how I created these my own problems, and then live with them. It's terrible. And I don't live that way today. And so today I just don't, I'm just, you know, that to me is my new God. It's just, you know, the byproducts of these steps. And it's pretty freaking great, man. I'm pretty amazed. All right, let's see. I'm going to see. Let's do, see if I can read the daily reflections. I'm working today. Back to work. Good football game last night. I like Aaron Rodgers. People don't like him, but it was a good game. Glad to see they played well, but they did lose. So if you don't like him, then you're happy. But it was a good Monday night football game. All right, here we go. My checklist, not yours. October the 15th. Gossip barbed with our anger, a polite form of murder by character assassination, has its satisfactions for us too. Here we are not trying to help those we criticize, we are trying to proclaim our own righteousness. Let me read that again because I don't think I understand that. Gossiped, barbed with our anger, a polite form of murder by character. Yeah, gossip, yeah. A murder by character assassination has its satisfactions for us too. Here we are not trying to help those we criticize. We are trying to proclaim our own righteousness. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. 12 steps, 12 traditions. Sometimes I don't realize that I gossip about someone until the end of the day when I take an inventory of the day's activities, and then my gossiping appears like a blemish in my beautiful day. How could I have said anything? How could I have said something like that? Gossip shows its ugly head during a coffee break or lunch with business associates, or I may gossip during the evening when I'm tired from the day's activities and feel justified in bolstering my ego at the expense of someone else. Character defects like gossip sneak into my life when I'm not making a constant effort to work the 12 steps of recovery. I need to remind myself that my uniqueness is the blessing of me, of my being, and that applies equally to everyone who crosses my path in life's journey. Today, the only inventory I need to take is my own. I'll leave judgment of others to the final judge, divine providence. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, gossip falls under, it's the same thing for me as sarcasm, you know? It's a character defect. I'm still confused of whether it's a character defect or a shortcoming. But, and I'm in the gossip business, right? I'm a hairstylist, so it's always chit chat. I try not to get too much into it. I try to stay out of everybody's business. Most of the conversations we tend to gossip about is like politics and stuff like that. But I try not to speak of others in an ill way, because I do think that it is, you know, because that in the end, right, you know, gossip, then you start to have fear again. And like I've said 50 freaking times, you know, my life, having a relationship with the higher power that I call God, is a life free of fear. And when I gossip, right, and let's say somebody, I say something about to somebody, and then that somebody is going to accidentally say something, all of a sudden somebody comes back to me and was like, why are you talking about me? That is what I don't want to happen in my life, right? It's the same thing with sarcasm. You know, you say something, you know, gossip allows me to be part of a conversation, right? It allows me to be part of a group, allows me to fit in, you know, and today that isn't important to me, right? I don't need to fit in. I don't need to be part of a group. So I don't need to take that route. I can be part of a group just being friendly, right? Without talking shit about other people. And it's the same way sarcasm used to be. Sarcasm allowed me to be part of the group, to fit in, to be funny, right? At somebody else's expense. And, you know, I'll never forget when my buddy Scott called me out and he says, you know, that shit hurt my feelings. And I was like, ugh. I felt like a, you know, about 1 inch tall. And I'll never forget it. And, you know, he made a good point. Anyway, listen, I hope everyone has a great day. I appreciate you letting me share, and we'll catch you later. Bye.